Welcome to the podcast version of Police Science Doctor, the online resource bridging the gap between research and investigative practice, for police personnel who go the extra mile, for academics who want to connect better with investigative practitioners, on YouTube and on policesciencedoctor.com. Good evening, everyone. This is Suzanne Knaber-Nicole from Police Science Doctor. And Police Science Doctor is the website where research in policing, investigative psychology, criminology, and other related areas are turned into videos that can actually be consumed by police practitioners who don't have time or access to browse through all the academic journal articles that are coming out every week. So what I do here on a Tuesday evening is I talk about three golden nuggets that I've pulled out from police research that I think might be relevant to you. But the criterion that I use to determine which ones I'm going to use are that they be really practical, something that a police practitioner can put to use straight away, not some kind of theoretical comparison of statistical analysis, in this case, revealed this, and it's something that you can't use, something that's not tangible, is not going to end up in these police science snippets. So every Tuesday, I pull out three such snippets. I try to present a mix of topic areas that might be relevant to policing. And in the first instance, they get sent out to everyone who's on the Police Science Doctor email list. So they get privileged access to stuff in exchange for being on the email list. Makes sense? So basically what you get if you're on the email list, you get the snippets sent to you on a Tuesday and usually in the afternoon. You also get the direct links to the articles that the snippets come from, because it's not my research I'm presenting here. I'm talking about other people's research that I'm trying to bring to you. And you also get access to the password protected read page on the policesciencedoctor.com website. Now, the read page, as in reading or listening or watching, the reading page has the transcripts for all the videos that are in the Police Science Doctor gallery. And it also has all the snippets. So you can download each of these as a PDF and you can build up yourself a little library. So if you want to look something up, you've got all the information there. So if you're not already on the email list, please join, go to policesciencedoctor.com and just put your details into the registration form that you will find there. Now, I don't have any interview to tell you about for this Thursday evening. This Thursday, I don't have an interview coming up, but I do have one for next week, Thursday, I think, but I will tell you about that nearer the time. Now, the first snippet that I want to talk to you about is about restorative justice. Now, restorative justice is something that can be arranged with a victim of a crime and the offender who committed that crime. It's something that they both sides need to agree to it, and there's a conference that takes place, which is a meeting. So the victim and the offender actually meet in a controlled setting, not on their own, with someone who's been trained to facilitate these meetings. You might find this a little strange, but perhaps if you have been the victim of a crime or if you know victims of crime, there may be a desire to confront that person, not to have a go at them, not to get some kind of revenge, but to actually talk to them about the impact that the offense had on you. Perhaps they burgled your house, you feel violated, you don't feel safe in your own space anymore. We are territorial, we need to feel safe somewhere. And a burglary can potentially disrupt that feeling of safety. So in some cases, and it has to be an offense where the offender actually admitted to committing the offense and they have to be willing to participate, as I said. So there's a meeting that is facilitated by trained facilitators. They may be working for the police, they may be working for a different organization. And they basically get to speak. So the victim gets to speak about the impact the offense has had, and the offender perhaps gets to speak about why they chose that particular victim, you know, what the reasons were that drove them to commit that offense, what they did afterwards. And the good thing about that can be, before I actually get to the snippet, that, for example, the unknown usually scares us, doesn't it? So if you know that you have been burgled, you didn't see the person, you don't know exactly what they did or who they are, what you can make up in your mind about this person, this, you know, perhaps this monster, this really scary monster that knows everything about your intimate life. They've been into your rooms. They've maybe gone through your things. You can catastrophize them into something that you can't disprove if you never meet them. Sometimes meeting the offender, who then basically all that image shrinks into the size of a person, maybe quite a sorry person. Sorry in the sense that they're not very impressive, they're not very successful in life, they obviously make bad decisions, which is why they are an offender. So sometimes they can really help victims to minimize the impact. Now, the science snippet here is the effect on the victim and on the offender. So, and the article I pulled it from is actually open access, so you can read the full article. Unfortunately, many articles that I refer to are behind a paywall or subscription wall, and you can only read the abstract. But this one you can actually read in full, which is fantastic. So they did a comparison between victims who were able to attend a restorative justice conference with the offender and victims who didn't have that opportunity. But they were equal, so they were randomly selected. So there was no other difference between them except the fact that some had the restorative justice conference, some didn't. So victims who attended an RJ conference were less fearful of repeat attack by the same offender. Now, again, if you don't know why the offender chose you, who they are, you may be thinking, oh my God, he knows where I live. He knows how to get into my house. He knows what I've got in my house. You might think that, you know, as soon as I come out of prison, you know, for burglary, you don't get locked up for years and years and years. You might think that I might come back. But actually, people who were able to meet that person and speak to them felt less scared of reoffending or being attacked again by this particular person. Victims who had RJ conferences were also more pleased with how their case was handled. They felt less vengeful and exhibited less emotional impact than victims who did not have an RJ conference. And this emotional impact can actually be the size of traumatic memories, traumatic experiences, and something that can turn into a really serious condition. So it's good for the emotional life of the victim and how they feel and how they think about the offense and how they contextualize it. Now, for the offender, it was found that it reduces their risk of reoffending to have been speaking to the victim for at least 2 years. Now, that's a positive impact for the victim, positive impact on the offender in that they tend to commit less of fewer offenses afterwards, but also the entire criminal justice system and also all the victims that they didn't become victims because that offender is offending less, at least for a certain amount of time. So restorative justice works. Second snippet I've got here is about child abuse and neglect. Now, it was found that mothers who abuse their children are poor at recognizing negative emotions in their children. So they don't recognize the cues that a child may be upset, that the child may be frightened, that the child may be in need of some emotional or even physical assistance or support. So mothers who abuse their children are not able to pick up those cues from their child. Maybe if they did, they would abuse them less. I don't know. Neglectful mothers have a low ability to recognize emotions in their children more generally. So not just negative emotions, but emotions more generally. So the reason why I've put that in there is because if you work in policing or in research, you may well come across people. You may come across people who are mothers. Now, I don't know what the situation is with fathers. This research was specifically talking about mothers. So what if you get some kind of feeling when you talk to this mother that they maybe you see them interact with children, maybe their children are there, and they're just not picking up on things, or they're very shallow in their ability to interact with that child. Now, you may have in the past, you may have just walked away thinking, you know, I feel a bit uncomfortable here, or, you know, maybe that was not mother of the year. But actually, with this knowledge, you know, especially if you get through the article or at least the abstract, maybe you can think about, okay, could that be a warning sign? Could that be a sign that perhaps this mother is also abusive and also neglectful? It's not necessarily the case, but it is a potential warning sign. So keep that in mind. And the last one is about suspect interviews. And rapport. So the nugget is, the science snippet is, the establishment and maintenance of rapport with a suspect throughout the interview is associated with high amounts of investigatively relevant information that is revealed by the suspect. Now, as a good interviewer, you know that suspect interviews are not about getting a confession. Okay. Suspect interviews are not getting about confession. Okay. Let's get that straight. Suspect interviews are about getting the suspect, the person you're speaking to, who may or may not be the offender, to open up to you and speak to you openly and honestly and give you information that you can then go and investigate. Okay. It's a myth and it's a bit of an ego play to try and get a confession because it feels good for the interviewer. I've been there. I was an interviewer. And there is unfortunately something that comes into your ego that makes you want to crack this person, but it's bad. It shouldn't happen. I should have known better. I'd already done my MSc and studied investigative psychology, but that just showed me how strong this this effect is. One second, excuse me. So the goal of a suspect interview is to help the suspect to create an atmosphere and an environment where the suspect is able to open up to you, to the interviewer, and provide information that is relevant to the investigation. And this research has found that this is more likely to happen if you successfully build rapport with the person from the beginning and you maintain it throughout. So how much more information could you get from a suspect if you actually get them on your side in a genuine way? We do not deceive. So as you know, here in the UK, there's very stringent rules. We cannot deceive the people we interview. We cannot pressurize them in any way. We cannot be oppressive in any way. The best way is to build rapport. If you want to get an honest account, you know, even if it's not a confession, an honest account of what happened, the best way to do that, and one of the best ways of doing that, is to build rapport and maintain that rapport. So I hope you found that useful. That was it for today. So these were my three science snippets for this week. Remember to go to policesciencedoctor.com and join the email list if you want to have these emails to you and if you want to actually keep them, download them as PDFs, and also have other perks that come with being a subscriber. I wish you a very good evening. Until next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. I hope you found this content useful. You can get access to each episode's transcript with key learning points, timestamps, and references if you get yourself onto my mailing list. Just go to the main website on policesciencedoctor.com, and on the bottom of each page you will find a sign-up form for notifications of new content. Just enter your first name, your preferred email address, and the type of organization you work for. You will not get any spam. This is just for me to let you know about new content and for you to get access to all the transcripts.